Good morning, everyone. This is Noel Cotter, and I'll be conducting the teleconference today. And I would like to ask each of you, please, don't put a call on hold. If you've called in and you need to do something else, you'll need to call. You can mute your phone, come back at the time that you want to ask. Okay, we're doing better there. If you will press 6, you'll be able to mute your phone. You will be able to hear, but we will not hear it. Much better. If you have not muted your phone, please press 6, and that will mute your phone. You'll be able to hear.
Oh, my.
Built, I believe that's star 6.
Okay, I'm sorry. Star 6. I can... Okay. I think we've accomplished what we needed to accomplish there. So, are we ready to begin? I think we are. Great. Here's what we'll ask you to do. You can unmute your phone when you want to ask a question simply by pressing 6, and then again mute it by 6, and then we won't have this background noise. Second point is that when you want to ask a question, and please feel free, just unmute your phone and you'll be able to speak and everyone will be able to hear you. This session will be recorded and then it will be available for LMI, of course, to have on their website or wherever they choose to put it so it can be listened to after the fact if anyone wants to. That'll be the same thing that will occur each of the weeks on Fridays that we'll be doing these sessions, and we'll be doing them every Friday at the same time through the rest of the year, except the Friday after Thanksgiving. Now, the sessions are going to be pretty informal. I'll try to kick this one off and we'll try to get started here, but I know that there are going to be a lot of questions and I'm going to want to certainly address those questions, and we'll make every effort to answer everyone's questions. And that's the most important thing that we want to accomplish here. I would like you all to please go to this site address, and it was emailed to you earlier by LMI, and you should have been able to click on it and bring it up. But in case anybody is not at the site address, the material is, you can get to that site address at http://assessments.lmi.usa.com/training. That will be the same site that will be used consecutively for these Friday sessions. What we'll do is we'll work on an exception basis. If anybody isn't at the site, can't seem to get to the site, then speak up. Otherwise, we will assume that you are off the site. So, with that said, is there anyone who has any trouble or has had any trouble in getting to the site we're going to be working off of? Okay, great, we're there. Now, let me begin by saying that this is a real high point for me to be able to conduct these sessions with each of you. It's especially a high point because it was 35 years ago last month that I personally worked out the beginning partnership with what was Success Motivation Institute, and that was before LMI really got started. So we actually have a history together between LMI and SMI and our company, CRI, that goes back 35 years. In those 70s, as the arrangements began, as many of you that have been around a long time may know, I trained Kurt Milliman, who ultimately then trained other people at LMI. So that's how that whole training process got started. Now, the testing program that we're going to focus on and talk about centers around the Achiever. You've known it through these years as the PES. The PES actually was the result of a program we created several years ago for usage. Now, if you really look at the two, they're virtually one and the same, and they are coming from the same test, and they always have for 35 years. Today, in the new version that you have through LMI, it will be referred to as the Achiever versus the PES. Now, there's some very basic and major high points I want to make you aware of right up front. And they're very significant and important. Number one, LMI, Stacy Dalton, and Bill Moyer, and Dave Bird have done a fantastic job in working the LMI training courses into this new version of the Achiever. I especially compliment Stacy for her work and Bill for his, because they've looked at the Achiever, the way it stands and the way it operates, and really done a fantastic job of making those LMI programs recommended in your new version of the Achiever. So basically what we're saying here is that not only is the Achiever a great advantage to you today, in whether you're using it in a training and development mode or whether a company is using it in a pre-employment selection mode, but also in selling LMI programs. And I think this is really great. Some of you will remember a number of years ago when I worked with Kurt Milliman and LMI, and we integrated the tapes with the Achiever, or the PES at that time. That was literally the first attempts in the late 1970s to link the two together, the diagnosis or treatment, if you will, through the courseware, and we did it through the tapes then. Obviously, things have advanced a great deal since then, so the new LMI integration is far superior, and that's very, very exciting. Now, as I go on, I want to talk to you about two very, very major points, and that is point number one. Even though you predominantly know the Achiever as a training and development instrument, or the PES, if you will, as you've used it for a number of years, in reality, the largest amount of the Achiever usage across America, well over 90% of it, is in pre-employment. It is the only instrument that I know of in America that contains, or its derivatives, I have to make that clear, or its derivatives that relate back to us financially. It is the only instrument in America that contains mental aptitudes and behaviors in one instrument, and validity scores, and then also rolls on and provides what we call the interview questions that are appropriate for the job, the training and development suggestions to develop the individual, and also it has the options for sales analysis potential and leadership management potential. So what I'm saying to you, that gamut of what that report offers today, we certainly believe we've never seen anything that quite exceeds it today. Now, regardless of what you've ever heard before, there's never been an adverse finding against any user for the use of the Achiever or the PES, nor has there ever been a settlement out of court. As we go on through the weeks here, we'll address more deeply the issues of legality and validity. And we're talking about that in a pre-employment sense. Now, in those particular issues, what we're talking about is the fact that, number one, the EEOC has reviewed the assessment and our reliability and validity manuals, And they've stated in writing that they find nothing discriminatory about its use by any employer. So that statement in writing is a very, very important statement. So that's the EEOC, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission that we're talking about. Point two, and I know this is going to seem a little bit fuzzy to you, but it's kind of important, so I'm going to go over it with you anyway, because it really does relate to the achiever very directly. And that is that today, in America, there are the federal contractors, the prime contractors. They're the General Dynamics and the LTVs and people like that. And they have contracts with the government or the government agencies. Now, they're subject to the Office of Federal Contract Compliance in their employment process. Point two, the second tier are companies or organizations who sell or rent $50,000 a year or more to prime contractors for the use in those contractors. Either level of those companies or organizations must be Office of Federal Contract compliant. Now, so that means if the OFCC ever walks into a manufacturer, a distributor, or a company that has to be OFCC compliant, as they review their hiring process, and they can also review their promotion and training processes as well. Now, as a part of that, they may ask for the testing that's being used in-house and the validation there too. Most testing companies run when they're asked that question. But we, in fact, have long since and do provide that data in writing. Now, it has to be pretty comprehensive, but the point is we do this quite frequently for those companies that have to be OFCC compliant, and the OFCC, not in writing, but verbally, has stated that our validity on the achiever meets and exceeds the requirements of the OFCC. So what I'm saying to you right now is there's no point at any time to be reluctant or concerned about anything to do with the achiever as to how we stack up from a legality and validity standpoint, and quite frankly, nor has there ever been a case to be worried or concerned about that. Further, for your information, periodically we do projects with the Army. The most recent one was for the Adjutant General with the Army National Guard in Florida. And just as another FYI to you, we are the testing vendor across America to the Department of Homeland Security, and have been since that agency was born. So, with that, the reason I'm going through all that is basically to give you confidence in the background of the achiever and from a legality and validity standpoint and where it's coming from. Now, what we're going to do is actually go into some things regarding the achiever, but before I do, I want this session to be a very open session, so I'm going to encourage any of you at this moment in time to unmute and ask any questions regarding the background of the instrument or whatever you may have in the way of questions regarding this relationship between the two companies. Or let's start with any questions in that area, if I may, please.
Are you following a PowerPoint presentation, or this is just an audio or verbal introduction?
No, we've asked everybody to go to the website that LMI has provided everyone. And in case you didn't get that email, we're at this website. It's http://assessments.lmi-usa.com/training. That site has been built for me to use in these training sessions, and also to have all of the backup material that can open from that site.
I'm already there since the beginning of the call, but is there any link that we need to click on to
open? Well, right now we're just looking at the outline for session one, and I've been doing the introduction and talking about the general website itself and the history of the achiever.
Sounds good. Thank you.
So we haven't opened up anything physically on it yet. I'm just now trying to add for any questions that anybody has about the background, the legality, the validity, any of the things that I've covered so far. Okay. History of the Achiever, you can click right there, and once you read, when that opens up, that's the first time I've asked you to open up anything, you can read the history of the Achiever, how Dr. Shirley was an industrial psychologist in Dallas, and used standard tests of the day for people like Mary Kay Cosmetics and Zales Corporation and those people in the late 1950s. He retained Dr. Raymond Cattell, the father of the 16PF, and Dr. James Moore, and the three of them built the Achiever under a different name at that time. In the 1960s, they used it in conjunction with the tests of the day and to make sure it was working correctly. John's path and my path crossed in 1971, and John and I came into the company in 1972. My background in testing was primarily for the Atomic Energy Commission, the Department of Defense, and Sandia Nuclear Weapons Laboratory from 1963 until 1972. So we came together in 72, and it was 72 that I had Dr. Max L. Fogel, a leading neuropsychologist in Philadelphia, document everything, and also Dr. C. Allen Siebenthal work on it so it could be literally taken out of being solely used in a psychological practice. So if you've opened it up, you can read the history of the Achiever, and then you can click on assessments. Once you click on assessments, then a whole new screen opens up, and you'll find data there on why test to begin with. And that builds a real case on why someone or why an organization should test. Number two, how to choose a test. And then we get into the Achiever solution. If you'll drag your mouse down on that, you'll see about the Achiever, the staining system, benchmarks, and how benchmarks are established. Okay. I've talked a little bit about the Achiever in general and about how you all well know how you can send people or companies you're doing business with can send people to a website and be tested, and then you can retrieve the Achiever. Now, what you don't know is, as I was going through those parts of the Achiever, and I went through and talked about the fact there's the narrative and sheet, and then behind that are the behavioral interview questions. They were created, obviously, by the suggestion of some really great companies, one of which was Texas Instruments, and they outlined, as I said, the questions that align the person to the job, make sure that they align, and then the other segments of the Achiever. But the Achiever operates, if you've drug your mouse over, you'll see that about the Achiever, then you'll see the staining system. It operates on the German system, the staining system, a scale of 1 to 9. And that can be readily compared to the bell curve of the population. And also, we're able then to be able to look at where someone scored compared to successful people in that job or compared to the general population. Now, when we go on to talk about benchmarks, there are actually three methods to compile benchmarks. And these three are optional methods. Number one, we led, beginning in 1972, was to create benchmarks via testing people that were successful in a job. In 1972, in the fall, I led the project with Sewell Village Cadillac to test the top salespeople in that dealership, and then to set the benchmarks based on them to write the ads in the Wall Street Journal to attract people to then test on the Achiever to determine which people had it and which didn't. Jerry Griffin was one of the guys that were selected at that time. He became the nation's leading Cadillac salesman, held that rank 3 years in a row, and has moved on up years ago and become the general manager of that dealership. And Carl Sewell owns multiple dealerships today. That was all documented in the book Customers for Life by Carl Sewell and Paul Brown. The second benchmarking in America was in the insurance business, people that were selling a million a year or more, and in residential commercial real estate at a million or more a year. Today, we still advocate benchmarking of top people within jobs that meet or exceed the employer's expectations as the model to compare applicants or the model to train people to in the future. And that's a great way. That's also called a concurrent validation method. And that's the most cream to cream that any testing organization can use to validate the test on top people in the job. So that's number one. Testing the people that meet or exceed the employer's expectations now, and then the benchmark is automatically derived by that. Years ago, we taught people how to do it manually. Today, the computer systems through that you're operating off of will do it automatically. The second approach with benchmarking...
This is Ray Stuckley. Just a quick question on that.
Yes.
What is the normal size of a group that you'd want to use to have the kind of validity you like tied to a top performer when you're creating a norm?
Great. I appreciate your stopping me and bringing that up, and I encourage everybody to do that. First of all, let's go back to American Psychological Procedures. American Psychological Procedures say that the acceptable percentage is approximately 11 to 13% is the minimum of the group. Now, the group isn't all the people in the job. The group is the people that are meeting or exceeding the expectations in the job. Have 300 people in that job, and you can only have 20 of them that were meeting or exceeding the employer's expectations. In that case, we're down to a number now of about two or three, obviously. So which really isn't enough. So what we try to do, and what you'll find, they'll be far more accurate if you possibly can do them on 10 or more people who are meeting or exceeding their expectations for the job. Try to do that as a minimum. But also, if there's a large quantity of people meeting and exceeding the expectations, try to get in that 10, 11% of that group. Now, oftentimes you don't have that many, and sometimes all you can do is work with three or four, in which case the computer systems won't what we call throw the benchmark automatically. It pretty well has to be manually done, which is like posting one score sheet on top of another and seeing where the people fall. But from a legal standpoint, you know, a whole test, if that whole test, like the Achiever with 16 elements, if there are only two of those that there's a clustering in, let's say within three stainines, then that test is considered to be valid as an indicator of the people that are going to be successful for that job. So you're not looking for all of the 16 or even a preponderate number of the 16 to come to a correlation. I know that sounds fuzzy, but that's the answer to your question.
Oh, that helped. That helped. Thank you.
The simple bottom line is if you could possibly do it, go for 10 or more. That's the quick answer. But always make sure that the people are meeting or exceeding the employer's expectations.
Okay.
And usually we say for at least 6 months or a year or 2 years.
Okay.
Now, historically, for the last 10 years, you know, if a company wanted a benchmark done, and an LMI will suggest money to you and all that kind of stuff, and whatever they say is what goes. But we've always historically charged at least $250 a person in that were included in that benchmark study. That's just, like I said, going back a good 10 years, just as an FYI. Okay. Any other questions on that one method of benchmarking?
Yes, this is Bert, and I had a quick question for you.
Okay.
What are your thoughts on working with organizations? You look at top performers and you look at the benchmark. What about middle performers and bottom performers, what they don't want or what they may want to develop?
Okay. We've done it literally dozens and hundreds of times. Here's the sticky wicket, and that is that there are times that the people that are in the bottom performance group. You've got them in that bottom performance group. And they're in that bottom performance group because they're in a miserable location or they've got a miserable product line that they are responsible for selling in the overall scheme of things, or somebody ranked them in as poor performer that doesn't like them, or they've been in the job too short a period of time. So the boogaroo is trying to validate that those people that are in that bottom group are truly poor performers as a result of no control, you know, of things that they were in control of versus circumstances that they're not in control of. I have seen many, many cases where, like Dixie Marathon, the paper cup people, for example, you know, where they, you know, these are our poor performers, okay? And then you go back and try to dig into why, and you find it's the territory they're responsible for, or you find out there are other reasons. And so that's what's sticky about that. Now, if the company, if the business has a really good system of validating that these people are poor performers and have been for a requisite period of time, then that's a whole different matter. The same thing is true with middle level.
So all things being equal, basically.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And that's where the sticky wicket is. And one of the things you'll see us going into later on, and it's on this website, and let me just mention this to you right now. This is as good a time as any. At 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, I'll be doing a national webcast through HR.com. You can register and attend it free. There'll be usually 400 or 500 people register for that, and we'll be dealing with performance management systems and performance reviews, building performance reviews and conducting them. And that whole system is available to you through LMI. But what I'm trying to say is we're dealing with so many companies today that don't have good, consistent methods of establishing people as being poor performers or middle performers. There's a real need for them to have a system to be able to do that consistently. And that's what these performance management systems are all about. So anyway, the bottom line is just make sure that when people are put in that pot as poor performers or middle level, that they are in fact truly that, not through circumstances beyond their control.
Right, just make sure you make sure that you find out what the reasons are and why they're there.
That's right, you are so right. The other thing is, I'll give you another example. State of Florida, Army National Guard in Florida. It was number 47 out of 50 in meeting their recruiting requirements. We said, okay, give us the recruiters that are meeting or exceeding their objective. They did. We tested them. We did the benchmark. We said, this is what your top people are like that are meeting or exceeding. We never dreamed it, but what happened was we then tested the middle and all the rest. And we said, these people in the bottom group are truly in the bottom group compared to the top group. They looked at their performance, validated their performance, they fired them all. Captain Chestnut was sent around the state and fired all the people in that. I thought we'd be in a lawsuit. We weren't. But anyway, it all went away. They brought in new people to replace the bottom group, and then they brought in a training company, sales training, and they trained the middle group and the top group and the bottom group. And last time I looked, about a year and a half later, they were number 7 and moving on up toward number 5 out of 50 in meeting their recruiting requirements for the Army National Guard. Okay.
One more question on pricing.
One more question.
Yes.
And the pricing, when you say $250 for the assessment,
I'm just saying that that's been done. I'm not advocating that to you. It's LMI's position to suggest and work with you on pricing. I'm just saying that historically, that's been what a lot of people have charged.
Would you suggest to charge that for the? Let's rephrase. That's a ballpark figure. Would you at that point charge that for the assessment and then charge a different charge for going over it, or is it inclusive?
That, again, I'm not making a recommendation to you. I'm just saying historically people have charged if they did 10 people and ran the study on them and came out with a benchmark and wrote a report on it, the bill was $2,500. And that had nothing to do with reviewing the results with the individuals or anything like that.
Okay, appreciate it. Thank you.
To establish the benchmark.
One more question, sir.
Sure.
Yeah. You talked about some of these external factors being responsible for certain performances.
Yes.
Now, to what extent the external factors can impact the personality traits?
Again, it depends on the job and the industry, but they can have clear-cut effects on the results. For example, in a Caterpillar dealership or an equipment dealership, the guy that's got the country route in West Texas is not going to have the action that the guy has in Dallas.
But wouldn't a strong personality trait be able to overcome some of those external factors?
If the market's not there, it's not there. I mean, it's just like when we're into self-service food, whether we're talking Kentucky Fried Chicken, whether we're talking Qdoba's, whether we're talking about Red Robin's. You know, production of a store, it can be based on what the neighborhood is like and what thoroughfares they're on. And so that manager, Baskin-Robbins is another one, the ice cream place, if that location stinks, that store is down to $600,000 or $700,000 a year. Whereas in a good location, that store will do $1 million, $1.5 million, purely of the location. Has nothing to do with the strength of the manager. So those are factors that we're talking about, extraneous factors.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. Moving ahead just a little bit here, there's a second way to do a benchmark. Both the American Psychological Association and the employment regulations permit a second methodology, and that is where you go in and you choose a benchmark that has been done for a like job, and generally if you can in a like industry. So you pull one out of a database and you start using that one. Okay? Now in this system there's a humongous database of jobs, hundreds of them that are benchmarked in this system and that are updated. It is perfectly legal to go in and run an Achiever report based on that extensive database and start a company up in that manner if you choose. Second part of that regulation is that at a reasonable point in time, 6 months, a year, 2 years, you go back and see how the people are performing and have performed that have been selected under the system for the job. And that validates that it's working for you, or you look at their scores, if you have enough of them, do a validation study, benchmark right then, and see if you need to alter that pattern or not. So that's perfectly acceptable, perfectly legal, and not challengeable as long as that process is followed. And we have companies like, for example, Cendant, C-E-N-D-A-N-T Corporation, located in Parsippany, New Jersey. They own City Travel. They bought the Wyndham Hotels last year. They own the franchising division for 12 different hotel brands, 3 different real estate brands. They track the franchise salespeople selected under the Achiever system to see that after they've been selected and see how they perform, they keep track of them to validate that they are in fact meeting and exceeding their production standards in selling franchises faster than the people that were selected without the Achiever system. They validate that kind of thing. So that's a company that does it very consistently. Honeywell Consumer Products does it very consistently. Across America right now, somebody like Crown Equipment is doing it. And so Brinks across America, Brinks Home Security do it very consistently. And those stories are great success stories because they are so growing and so successful and so profitable. Another great one that does that too, that always good to talk about. In 1977, we set up Universal Computer Systems. The guy that was originating it and building that business in Houston as a new business, and started him on the Achiever as the hiring process. And to this day, 30 years later, everybody's selected for that corporation from startup to now have gone through the Achiever. That company grew and grew and grew, started buying some other small companies 2 or 3 years ago. They were up to 2,200 people before last year. They control 24% of the software business and automobile dealerships in America, and they laid down $2.8 billion and bought Reynolds and Reynolds out of Dayton, Ohio, and are integrating the two together and have been for the past year. What's integration? It means that thou shalt hire no more people at Reynolds without passing the Achiever and matching up to the UCS standards. And it also means that the people that were acquired have been put through the Achiever to determine who to keep and who to let go and how to integrate them best into the new company. So that's, you know, and certainly UCS has been very good over the years of updating and validating their benchmarks, and it's played a major role in their success, and it will play a major role in their growth and development as the new combined company, having about 50% of the marketplace of software and dealerships and competing with ADP for virtually about the other half of the market. Anyway, another point. So, and the second type of benchmarking using these companies like that have used when they only had a small number of people that they couldn't set the benchmark on. So that's very appropriate. Point three, there's another method of dealing with establishing a benchmark. Don't know where you've been or how you've done it, but through the systems as they are today established for LMI, there is a methodology where you can go in through the web and you simply take a job description and answer questions about the job, and the benchmark is automatically derived. That, again, is considered to be a very valid approach because you're actually setting it on the requirements of the job. Again, it makes sense later on to make sure that it's working for you. So, in essence, to summarize this, there are three methods of establishing a benchmark. And they're all explained, and examples and everything are displayed within the site and within the material that we are discussing today. I'm into this thing now for 40 minutes, so I'd like to kind of loosen up the discussion here a little bit and kind of throw the floor open for comments on anything to do with testing or the Achiever. Are the new LMI product in the Achiever? And let's just have some dialogue on that.
I have a question.
Okay.
This is Valerie in Reno, Nevada. And what I'm wondering is, since it's the same set of questions, can we go back through a purchase of a click or whatever you're calling your unit and re-enter client's description so that we can use performance appraisal?
I'm sorry, we're getting some bleed through from somebody's phone and we can't all of Valerie's questions. I'm sorry. Would you please restate that, Valerie?
Okay. What I'm wondering is, since the set of questions for the Achiever is the same as for the PES,
yes,
can we, through the purchase of a click or a unit, whatever you call your unit, re-enter the information into your system so that we can use it towards the performance appraisal part or not?
Well, I think you have two things on the table here. Your purchases will continue as they have been from LMI, so that nothing has changed there.
There's somebody talking.
Yeah. Nothing at all has changed there. Second thing is, when we talk about the performance of management, the performance management system, we're talking about a totally different system. And that performance management system allows companies to come in and create their performance appraisal templates and then do performance appraisals online and house them through the systems, and also to integrate the Achiever into that performance management system and that performance appraisal. So
that's exactly what I was referring to.
Oh yes, from PES can be uploaded into that performance management system.
We would need to re-enter, though, of course, right?
No, there's a way of exporting it in.
Oh, okay, cool. If it was taken online,
kind of like you would send an email. Let's put it that way.
Okay. Wonderful. Thank you.
Okay.
Hey, this is Linton Burke, and a quick question for you.
Yes.
What language is this available in?
We offer the Achiever in English, and we offer it in Spanish.
And there's no booklet anymore?
Oh, the booklets have been history for a long time. Are they still around? Yeah, but very limited usage.
Yeah, I've had some clients request it, but at this point, they're defunct, right?
Well, we try to say that, but in reality, there are a few that dribble out here and there for unusual circumstances. The problem is, if you have to do that, then somebody's got to go into the system and enter the scores, you or the client one. So, and that is, it is doable, but it sure isn't something we want to build on.
Okay. No, I understand. All right, so English and Spanish at this point.
Right, and let me say this to you, too. You get into the issues about how about other languages. And the problem is we've been there, done that. And like UCS, when they bought companies in Russia and Germany and places like that, we got into all these translations, just like we had years before with Texas Instruments, for example. And then later on they found out that if they allowed people to go through the testing in that language, and then they found that they later on had problems with being able to read the company communications or the policies and procedures on how to do the job, and they later got into actual performance issues, so they ultimately determined that better that they have to pass the English version and be able to communicate, at least read it and understand it, they would have less problems with them in the performance of the job. However, in all truth and reality, there are still some circumstances today, like, for example, the group of blood centers, ZLB plasma centers, 66 of them. Many of those, they do convert into Spanish, so that the people take it in Spanish because they're actually working in Spanish facilities where everything is both written and spoken in Spanish. And we've had that in some of the check cashing operations, you know, those little hole-in-the-wall check cashing places behind the bulletproof shields where they have to swing back and forth. In Puerto Rico, for Shearing Plow and AstraZeneca, things convert back and forth between English and Puerto Rican. But we don't want to build on that because there are just too many takeoffs and variations of even when you use the term Spanish.
Okay, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay.
Other questions of any nature on it talked about or haven't that you may have?
Yeah, Milt.
Yes.
This is Ray Stuckley. With the you might be covering this coming up, but I've used and I have the PES software.
Uh huh.
So I run them and all that great stuff.
Uh huh.
With the system that you have now, is that something where we have software or it's all through the internet? How does that work?
It's all through the internet.
Okay, so the software I have really, I don't need that anymore, basically.
That's right, and to be honest with you, you're better off not to be using it because the new systems that run through the internet have, gosh, like as I was saying in the Achiever report, by using it through the internet. You've got three different benchmarking techniques. You know, develop it and put it in for your client by the validation study, concurrent validation study, or through the internet. You can access this massive database of benchmarks, or through the internet you can create a benchmark based on the job description. So just those three functions alone of being able to produce a defensible benchmark for the hiring process are extremely strong, and reasons why it's better to run through the internet than to run off of the old disks as we created them and brought them out 2.5 decades ago. The other thing is the report today, the new reports, the new that you run through the internet, gosh, you've got whenever that report spits out, you've got, as I said, you've got the narrative, you've got the score sheet, you can do an analysis as to that person's sales orientation or leadership orientation. The development suggestions will spit out there, or at the end of the report, the development suggestions spit out there, and they're spitting out with the recommended LMI programs, which is terrific. Your software not going to spit all that new stuff out.
Oh, no, and I don't have any problem with that whatsoever. I just, with the, when we are doing this, and then I'm assuming the assumption is the same, the people would do this the same way they do now. You give them the link and a password, and
right.
They go in. Okay. They just
that's
do that
right.
The way? Okay.
Right.
And
not any major difference in the way you've been doing business, you know, with LMI. It's just that you have a greatly improved and enhanced product, number one. Number two, we're actually maintaining tech support through the Dallas Tech Center here, through of the systems under the direction of a gentleman named Steve Burt, who's sitting here with me, and that tech support is there to help people on an ongoing basis, and he has a staff under him for live support 8 to 5 Monday through Friday, and then we have automated support beyond that. So the tech support area is greatly enhanced, the product is enhanced, the tech support is enhanced, and I hope that maybe since you're dealing with the people that started the thing, maybe we can, you know, also enhance in some manner your ability to sell it to more people and use it more frequently and more extensively. We would like to accomplish that for you.
Well, and I think it's a fabulous tool. I mean, I've used it now, and I have utmost confidence in its ability and how to use it. It's like anything, you know, I know, I'm at the stage right now where I know what I know, and I'm looking at this, and there's, I'm sure as we go through this, more and more. Now, how quickly could, you know, we start using this, okay? Because I...
This afternoon. I'm sure Stacy Dalton will be, or the appropriate person at LMI will be happy to help you get right on it right after you hang up off this call.
Okay.
Bill, this is Rich LaWine in Philadelphia.
Uh-huh.
I have a question about validity vis-a-vis cultural and educational differences. How much of an impact? Well, let me preface it by saying over the years, the amount of immigration from other than Hispanic is increasing.
Right.
A lot of Orientals, Koreans, etc. have
right.
come in, Russians, and besides the language, their values are quite different. Their educational systems are different. What kind of an impact do those cultural and educational issues have on the validity of the achiever?
The answer to that is where you have an organization who builds on a cultural group, be they from Taiwan, be they from Haiti, be they from Saudi Arabia, if you take that group, that subgroup, that are meeting or exceeding your expectations in that job, and you test them and you find out how they score and in what ranges and at what levels, and you start matching to that, then you're going to be effective. Number two, a again, if you take that total group in that job, regardless of who they're from or where they're from, and regardless of what they are culturally, and you take the representing samples that are meeting or exceeding their expectations, it may be that they're dumb as hell. They score a one or two mentally, and, you know, wherever they are perceptively, and, you know, they may have some different scores in personality. You know, but wherever they cluster, it's proving that that group is the successful group because they are performing, and wherever those scores are, that is a valid benchmark.
Okay, I appreciate that. I understand that. How about the situation where an organization of maybe 50, 60, or 70 people is predominantly U.S., and they have begun over the past few years to bring in mixed groups? They're not truly groups, they're individuals who come from different backgrounds. How do we handle ones and twos?
It depends on what job category are they bringing them into. First question, what job category are they coming into, and what are the requirements of that job?
So are you, I want to be sure I understand what you're saying. If there's a standard for someone, let's say they're a project manager, and they happen to come from, I don't know, they come from Korea.
Okay.
And they can read English, but they didn't get here till they were 25 years old. They were born and raised, etc., in Korea. If we use a project management standard or benchmark as it exists today to and use the achiever, and they score well, or they score poorly, is it valid information?
Absolutely. And when one of the reasons that I gave you that example, of, you know, for example, with Texas Instruments, they have found that those people, regardless of where they are in the world, they have to meet their benchmark or a job category to be successful in that job. And if they don't, they aren't.
Okay, so it's based on the benchmark. If they can read the test, then it's okay.
Right. And we've had situations where you had to use languages that were spoken by the computer, where people had disabilities from a visual standpoint and had to listen and take the thing with their hands.
Mm-hmm.
Still valid. And actually, that system was rolled out several years ago by the American Braille Institute or something. I can't remember. Lighthouse. I don't remember which one.
Okay.
And certainly become valid there.
Thank you, Milt.
Okay.
Milt and Lawrence in South Carolina, I think I heard you say that you were going to do a presentation on HR.com. Is that correct?
Yes.
Would you repeat the data there?
Okay. It will be on performance management system, which doesn't have anything to do with selling testing. It's performance management system, building performance appraisals, and running them. And that's another product that's offered by LMI through our renewed and enlarged partnership. That program will be this coming Tuesday, and it's free, but you have to register in advance prior to Tuesday with HR.com. With HR.com, and it'll be, I will be giving it on performance management systems. We usually run from about 400 to 600 people on those webcasts for HR.com, and the people that attend, one of the reasons they attend, they're interested in systems like this from the companies they are attending from, but they also receive credit from the Society of Human Resources as a result of attending, which can then be used for other certifications they're trying to get.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, other questions?
Milt, Deborah Hood. I may be looking ahead a bit of where you wanted us to be this morning, but I am looking at the sample report for the Achiever available on the website.
Uh-huh.
I'm not seeing any indication of information from combinations of mental aptitude and personality dimensions.
No,
such as the PEA.
No, and you shouldn't be. Let me explain why. Because in about 1979, we had some people and we saw that there were a variety of cases where there were aptitudes and behaviors that appeared to correlate. And I basically went along with the creation of that at that moment in time, 1978, 79, and we ran that for a period of a few years. But we found in going back and tracking the actual results that there were two major problems. Number one, that they were wrong as much as they were right. So if you don't have, you know, if they've got a 50-50 right versus 50-50 wrong, you don't have a winner. So that was one reason all alone in trashing them. The second thing was that we also found that too many times a company would read that correlation and that output that was a result of that and get so hung up with it that they couldn't go on and wouldn't go on with considering that person. So for those two reasons, those trashed out of our systems a few years ago.
I have a question that follows up on that one. There seemed to be a portion of the report, and I don't remember exactly where, but say, for instance, if it talks about a person's leadership ability or some of the characteristics.
Uh-huh.
I was, what if a person claims to be very assertive, but they're really low assertive? You know,
That happens a whole lot.
I know. I've seen it quite a bit. That's why I'm asking the question.
Okay. What you have to realize is
that affects that part of the profile.
What happens is that we perceive ourselves differently than the way we really are. And so when we answer questions to describe ourselves, you know, am I tall and handsome? You know, I may say yes, but in reality I'm not. But as many people will say, you know, I'm very good with people or I'm assertive or those kind of things, and the assessment will show that they're not. So our questions are psychologically based questions to get at an objective answer as to how the person is versus how they perceive themselves to be. Two totally different issues.
Are you saying there's an additional set of questions for, say, for instance, the executive achiever?
Okay, now what you're doing now is talking about different products. We had not gotten into different products.
Oh, okay.
Do that, okay? You have the achiever.
Right.
What we've been talking about much of today here. We have the same thing that's called the sales achiever, but it just talks in sales language. It's in your system. So there are two versions of the achiever that talk to the employer. Mr. Burke, John Doe, tested to be a 5. Okay. Then there's still another version that talks to the individual. John, you've tested to be a number 5. And one thing on that may, I don't know whether it'll become reality with our needed or what, but in some areas, and this would be great, that version of the achiever can be made available on a credit card basis where an individual can go in and answer the questions about their job, take the achiever, and get it back automatically talking to them, and we're looking at, you know, having those LMI programs suggested right there, and then, you know, would you like to investigate a program quick? You know, so all that is quite doable, conceivable, and basically it operates in some other ways in that manner now. So there's the you, what I'm trying to say to you is there is the you version of the achiever, just like you've had the you version of the PES. So that achiever, sales achiever, employer version, you version is the prominent item in the product line. Above it is the executive achiever. And the executive achiever is much more pricey, and yes, there are a bunch of questions in there beyond what's in the achiever.
Okay.
And thus resulting in a more expensive and executive-oriented report. Then, when we drop down a notch below the achiever, the first logical program we drop down to is the Guardian, where we get into simpler, more economical, but yet we have mental aptitude, we've got math, we've got perception ability, we've got important dimensions, Then we drop down from that into the performer, the scoreboard, the lower level instruments, whereby you've got direct admissions questions as well as psychological questions for personality to establish job fit. Take a Toyota across America for the hourly rate people in manufacturing or distribution. Those people basically go through the lower level instrument, not the achiever. They go through the personality and in most cases the direct admissions questions as well to establish that they're going to be team oriented and that they're going to be reliable and dependable. So what's happened here is whereas you've had the PES predominantly for training and development of people, you now have the PES in the form of the achiever, but you've got a lot of other products too. And these sessions are going to have to be to help you obviously understand them and how to apply them and us handle your questions and that sort of thing as we go along the way so that you do understand the spectrum of products and also so that you understand the ability to sell them where the largest amount of business is sold, and that's in the pre-employment marketplace. We have for years built that business, and the way it's built is to test two people that work for an employer right now, two people that are meeting or exceeding their expectations in a job category, or one who is and one who isn't, and then sit down and go over those results, taking a score sheet and go over the results either by phone or in person and present them to that employer and go through them with them, and then as a result of the presentation, you know, you've gained the employer's agreement that it's accurate, that sort of thing, and move right on into a close. So that's a very, very effective system, and we have traditionally backed people in doing that because it's a really effective approach. One out of two organizations, if you have a qualified buyer who those results are printed to, become a buyer.
Hey, Mel.
Yeah.
This is Richard Holman from Philadelphia.
Yes, Richard.
In setting up the account, could you tell me if you're setting the LMI franchisee up as, say, an account, and then all the customers or clients or individuals are then set up as sub-accounts, or is it all based on the decision of password and access?
Here's how it works, Richard. You're able to be set up by LMI with your master account and your secondary account, which actually can be a string of secondary accounts. So that means you can set up any number of people under you, whether you have a consultant or two working with you, or whether you're setting up individual companies or users under you. So you have the ability, like a Christmas tree, to control that whole process.
Thank you.
Okay, just another comment to you. One of the greatest professors in that Philadelphia area is Dr. Susan Warner, and she has been probably the leading prof in HR and graduate student teaching in HR at the university there. She was also on the president's committee on testing and legality and all of that kind of stuff. And she's also, in addition to being a college prof, she's also a lawyer. She actually goes back with us since to the 1970s. And a lot of the people in that area, whether they're, you know, if they're top-notch HR people, will know the name Dr. Susan Warner. And she's been certainly a very great advocate of ours for many years.
Will a sub-account or a secondary accounts, as you just defined them, will they have access to all the different types of programs, or will they have to be enrolled by specific program?
I think you're referring to the testing that you want, that you're asking them to use or you're providing them?
Yes, I mean, if we've been using the PES and we want to use the Achiever, obviously, and say the Guardian or another, by just setting them up as a single account, will they have access to all the direct assessments?
Yes, yes. Let me give you an example of how this works. When you buy, and I'm just giving you an example here, let's say you buy 10 or 100 achievers from LMI, you get X number of credits. Let's just say, example, if you buy 10 achievers, let's say you get, and each is 9 credits, you get 90 credits. Okay, in reality, those credits will fuel any of the assessments. So you don't have to buy 3 achievers and 2 performers and 1 guardian. You follow me?
Gotcha.
Okay, and that also runs up the tab, see, which is great. Because that way, when you set up an employer, they can use, you know, a lower level test like the scoreboard for the hourly rate people. They can use the achievers, for example, on managers and supervisors. They can use sales achiever on the sales people, and the meter's running.
I just have one last question. In certain situations, in the entry positions or lower level positions, whether you relate that to hourly workers or production line or whatever, they do not have good skills, computer skills, and they prefer a paper version and then have someone enter it. Are we going to have hard copies to all the assessments if that be the need?
No, 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 no. You're kidding yourself and somebody's playing games with you. Let's go back to square one. First of all, 3 years ago, HUD put computers in all of the federal housing so that people in HUD housing can go onto the computer and apply for a job. Second of all across America, with the workforce commissions, when they put in the one-stop centers, they put in kiosks. You can't go in there and even apply for disability or Social Security or workman's comp or anything else without doing it directly onto the computer. Even the lowest level hourly rate people that waltz into a one-stop center to look for a job have got to use the computer. In addition to that, many employers these days will arrange to put an icon, or they'll get them to put an icon on the screen to cause the direct application from those centers directly to their jobs. For example, in the case of the state of Florida, the Associated Grocers, those warehouses with the Mexicans, the Haitians, all that kind of people that are rattling around down there in Miami, and especially that economic zone in Miami where the big warehouse is located, 700 people work in it, maybe they apply for the job by the computer. They waltz into the HR office in the front. They got a computer tied into the internet and limited to just the application process. They got one parked in the back, right in the back of the warehouse, and they won't fool with paper on a bet. Most of the cases, their applicant flow triples when they go computer versus paper. In the case of equipment dealerships, manufacturers, take a manufacturer like compressors, Waukesha Pierce across America, for example. No paper, baby. You walk in, you park it at a table and chair, and you take it right there through that PC that's tied into the web and limited to that process.
Well, I think one of the questions could have been, how will that affect, if they're hunting and pecking type of thing, but they can still work on the computer, isn't that going to affect their performance on the mental aptitudes?
They aren't, hourly rate people aren't usually being tested on mental aptitudes.
Okay.
They're usually just taking the personality, so there's no time zones there.
Okay, yes, of course. That makes
sense. And also, let me say this. Take a Toyota recruiting thing on a new distribution center. There might be 2,000, 2,200 people lined up at the time they start being processed. Yeah, paper can be made available, and you can make paper available today. But somebody's got to take that paper on the achiever or the scoreboard or something like that and put it into the computer. Now, I will quote some of these manufacturers and distributors. I'll quote one of the biggest booksellers in America and then a smaller one, Joseph Beth. And all of them say, we get a higher quality candidate who stays longer and is more effective as a result of their having to go through our process and having to go through it via the computer.
Yeah.
They stay longer, they're more highly productive, and I get a better person in my workforce.
This is Linton Bergson. Sorry.
Yeah, go right.
I had a quick question. I don't see a norm suitability score on the new test. Is there a reason for that?
I'm sorry?
than a norm suitability score on the new test?
Or the final score?
No, the norm suitability.
There isn't a score that says you made a 28 or a 58 on this overall suitability for the job. It simply shows the person's X scores compared to the benchmark.
Is there a reason why that was dropped?
Well, the problem is, for that thing to work and be valid, you've got to program it for every single job in every single company.
Okay. I'm lost. Why was it dropped? I don't understand.
For there to be a suitability score, a singular score that gave somebody like a 56, 68 on their match to the benchmark, that would have to be derived by every single, separately for every single job in every single company.
It was on the old one though, right?
There's a lot of stuff on the old thing that needs to go away. Like the correlations, for example. That's why they're not there anymore.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, anything else? Okay.
Once the profile information is taken, once the participant has taken the profile, of course we're not looking for that score, so maybe there's not as much reason to do this, but there were times when I used to run people against more than one job.
Oh, you can still do that. Yeah, you can do that. No problem.
Or the price of one, the same credit, or is it?
Now that hasn't changed.
Okay, terrific. Thank you.
Right. And let me say this to you, too. Another reason for that score going away, and it really went away several years ago, and just didn't happen in where the program you got have, is that, you know, there's two philosophies in testing. One philosophy is, you test and you are the way you are and baby, you ain't gonna ever change. And the other philosophy is that, okay, this is like a picture taken of you right now, and when you change the circumstances, then we should be changing the output of the human behavioral pattern. Meaning, a person is made up of three things, genetics, environment, and biochemistry. Biochemistry is what you're eating and drinking. Genetics dictates your height, your bone structure, the color of your skin, your eyes, and all that. But in the environment that you're in, you're affected by the drugs, the alcohol, the food you're eating, but you're also by training programs. So, we should be looking at these scores and saying, this is how the person is right now. But if we deploy these LMI training programs that the person needs, then we should be able to measure the person in productivity in the job and see improvement in their effectiveness in the job. And likewise, these scores should change as well, positively. And so, you know, people just get too hung up over a numerical score as based on a benchmark.
Well,
Linton Bergson, once again, is there a suggestion here, and I don't want to misinterpret what you're saying, that we could give this assessment prior to a training program? They go through a training program, we see behavior change, and then give them the assessment again, and we should see that?
Absolutely, but you'll see it more so after they've been through the training program and they go into practicing what they've been trained in.
Yeah, that will be an interesting sales tool.
Yeah. And many people have done that through the years, especially people in the selling world, like the Lita Boy sales training, test them before they put them through the training and test them afterwards.
I thought there was a consensus of thought that you don't test people within a year or two.
Where that comes from is the fact that we always said that you need to test somebody at least every 2 years. Because even though biochemistry may or may not have changed, the environment is likely to have changed, and if it has, then we should be changes in their behavioral output, which is their behavioral in their job or their life. So we've always said they should be tested no longer than every 2 years. We've never advocate you don't test in less than a year. I've never heard that one before in my life, and I've been in this 30-some years.
So what you're suggesting is that we can test at the beginning and maybe 9 months after 9 months, take a program and then do it 9 months, say?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Okay. Anybody?
I do have another question.
Okay.
This could be a lot. You know, I had thought that there was a difference with a profile between learned behaviors and actual personality, and that we were looking for actual personality versus learned behaviors. But you're saying learned behaviors are okay and they would be valid as long as they're consistent?
Absolutely, because what happens is, let me give you an example. You test somebody, and they're a 3 in sociability. Okay, they're not really outgoing. You put them through all kinds of training, and they learn to be more outgoing and sociable. So they move up from a 3 to a 4 or 5. They haven't moved up to a 9, but they've moved up a notch or two, and a couple of levels oftentimes is really great. So, You're actually measuring their a learned behavior.
Okay, well, that's going to be a new thought process.
Yeah, that's new to
you. You actually learn to be more assertive, too, if you're given dominance or assertiveness training. You learn how to be a better manager by learning management styles and techniques, that kind of thing. That's why, again, going back to 1972, I was very interested then in this partnership between SMI and our company, because we believed back then that when you tested somebody, this was how they were at that day and time, just like a Polaroid black and white picture. If you deployed the training materials, and then you should be able to deploy them, and you should be able to reach a test and see not only changes in scores, but also you should be able to talk to the employers and validate the changes in their behaviors in the job.
Now, I always thought there was a consensus of thought that people tend to naturally revert back to, or want to revert back to, their natural behavior. And when they had a learned behavior, you were stretching them out of a comfort zone, and for them to own that behavior is not natural. Their more natural tendency is to go back to how they want to behave originally.
No, I wouldn't buy that one for a minute. Neither would our Dr. Robert L. Snyderman or half of those and other PhDs we deal with and know. Now, what we're saying is to put this into perspective. If you have the Steinman system of a 1 to a 9, you're not going to move somebody from a 1 to a 9. But oftentimes, you can move them with the right training and management suggestions and help and all of that. One level, two levels, sometimes a max of a 3. And that's enough to make them a lot more successful, but that does not mean that they're going to revert back into being a number 1.
Not even under pressure?
You bring up something here that there are all kinds of degrees of things, all kinds of degrees of things. If you're low in emotional maturity, and also you're highly restless, a D1 or nervous tension 1 or 2, and you're low in emotional development, a 1 or a 2. When great deals of stress and pressure are placed on you, you're more likely to react against them or blow up, you know, whatever that reaction is. But if you go through all kinds of stress training and how to handle it and how to deal with it, and stress management, and it becomes a part of you and a routine of you, then you're going to be less likely to explode or blow up than if you had not gone through that training. You're not going to go through the training and then revert to always blowing up as many times and as sky high as you did before the training, if the training had any effectiveness at all.
Milt?
Yes.
Bill Moyer, because we're about 20 minutes past our time, let me just summarize to help everyone. Every week, we'll be posting a Q&A, a question and answer update. This week, later today, there'll be one that'll go up to everyone that's involved with this. If you have other specific questions like the ones that have come up, if you email your questions to Tammy, she'll get the answers for you. She'll answer your question as soon as she gets the answer directly back to you, but then post it so that everyone will get all the questions as they come in so that we can stay on track as we're on the calls and cover the specific topics, learn the products, and how we're going to launch this. So today we really wanted to have as much openness as we can, but it's going to be real important for the future. As you get different questions about your specific applications and all of that, if you just send that email to Tammy, she's going to be spending time every day just answering those questions and then posting the summary for everybody to get the answers. So that we don't have to spend quite as much time just handling specific needs.
Terrific. And let me mention to you, too, we always expect people, these are geared to be about an hour, that people don't want to stay on over an hour, that they sign off, and, you know, many times we'll just stay on to help people that are interested longer than that period of time. Next week, we'll focus on the issues of legality and validity. And Eric Carter, who is has been in this business for 22 years, is going to lead that whole thing, and he's very interested in everything to do with legality and validity. Most of the time, I'll lead the sessions, but he's going to do next week. Bill, what else do you want to comment on today?
I think that's about it. We had a really good take a look at the schedules of what's coming up, and try to take advantage. For any of the ones you missed, they are going to be made available for you to go back and review. And I'd also suggest, even if you were on one of the calls, because it'll be posted for you to listen again, that sometimes it'll clarify some things, some questions that you might have just by going back and reviewing it again. And as I answered a lot of you as you sent questions during this week, just be patient. Over the next couple of weeks, all the questions that you have will get answered. I think you can tell by the time you spent with Milt today that this is going to be a good relationship for everyone involved, the knowledge and experience that they bring to the table, and especially their knowledge of LMI and what we do, is really important. So, but what I will suggest is just be patient. The good things take time, but over the next couple of weeks, we'll really get you up to speed. And the one question that he already answered is really important. You have access to these things now, and just work closely with that. Whatever we get, we don't have the answers to, we'll connect you with Milt and his team there to take care of whatever specific client needs you have. And that's about all I have to say. Milt,
where are you going to be posting the answers?
It'll be posted on the website as part of the weekly update.
Okay. Thanks.
Get all of those things. If you ask a question, Tammy will answer your question by email to you personally, but then she's going to take your question and put it as part of the overall Q&A so that everybody gets it, so we don't have to answer the same question a lot of times.
Okay.
Bill, are we going to talk to Stacy for if we want to actually order?
If you want to order, you order from customer service.
Customer service, all right.
Just like nothing for ordering has changed at all. They're involved in that in everything that's gone on here. They're on this call right now, so they're ready to take orders and get you set up and be patient with them, because it's very similar to what we've done before. But the first time through for each of you may take a little longer, so just hang in with us and it'll work out fine.
Bill, are you going to have is there a price structure that's set up, or?
The price list will be posted as well. The price list is already set, but you're going to be very familiar with that. Well, we have a price list for all of the products that are available that'll be posted along with the tank.
Hey, Bill, this is Mike in Columbus. Hopefully you can hear me.
I can.
If I've got a client right now that's having some problems with the PEF and want to convert them right away, can somebody help me walk them, you know, kind of get on the line and dual sell this to them?
Milt will help you with anything, any transition as you need it to set a client, so you'll be able to talk to him. But I will suggest, make sure you don't take advantage of that situation where we bombard them with things that don't require them. But if you're transitioning a client for the PES over to the new system and you need help with that's the kind of thing that they'll help you with, just like they would setting up a new client.
Yeah, I'm not asking for help to sell this to a new client. I need to get somebody converted over as soon as possible.
Yeah, you could handle that with them.
Okay, and his contact information is available? It's on his website, right?
Okay. If you have any closing remarks, we'll try to let everybody get back to whatever they were doing. And thank you for a good job on the first call, and to all of you for committing much time. And we're looking forward to some great things in this new relationship with them. So, Milt, welcome to the LMI family, and we're excited to be joining with CRI for this joint venture.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure being with you guys and women today.
Okay. Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Mel.
Thank you. Good stuff.